This is the October 20 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. Our panelists for the day include Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, and Brian Split, all of agmarket.net. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You may find it online at willag.org, and right now you'll find a place to register there for the Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up on the 21st day of November. Come join the Farm Doc team, the crop scientist from the U of I, and others to talk about the future of agriculture and what it looks like going through the coming year. It's all during the Farm Assets Conference, the 21st day of November. That's the Monday, the week of Thanksgiving. You can't afford to miss it. Register today online at willag.org or farmassetsconference.com or on the Farm Doc Daily website. Now, Brian Split, you've not joined us before. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Sure, Todd. So I started in the commodity industry back in 2007, so 15 years in the industry, and really predominantly started teaching myself the technicals. That's how I found my way into the industry, and have leaned on that pretty heavily as I do my futures and futures trading, and then how I structure my option positions as well.
Do you have a philosophy as it's related to the technical trade in the fundamental marketplace?
Well, I definitely don't want to ignore the fundamentals, and I'll generally have a fundamental bias that we will get within our group, and then I'll use the technicals to trade against that bias. Some of the technical trades we do, of course, will be put on without any kind of a fundamental bias and just relying on the technicals themselves. But one of the very simple things I try to do, especially when I'm working with producers or end users, is just really using the technicals to identify major points. So, for example, for a producer, we can identify, hey, we do not want corn to get below this level. And if we're going to use hedging strategies that are using options, then we will use those technical analysis to help structure those option positions.
Most who trade technically will say that it will tell you where the market might go, but potentially not which direction it will trade. Are you of that ilk as well?
Yeah, my general thought, Todd, is technicals is kind of an if this, then that type of a thought process. So if this level gets taken out, then this level is the next spot that we're likely to try to test. Or if corn were to break through this level, then this is the level that we are going to see for the next objective. So more of a if this, then that thought process.
What are your favorite technical tools? Do you like Head and Shoulders? Do you like Fibonacci numbers? Do you like other sorts of items that generally are available to everyone?
Yeah, I mean, pattern recognition, I think, is one of the most basic things that we would try to do. So head and shoulder patterns are somewhat easy to spot just because they do stick out on charts. If anybody wants to see probably a fantastic example of one and how it's worked out over the last couple of weeks, go look at a natural gas chart. That's probably the best example of a major head and shoulder top, and then what the market has done since breaking through the neckline. I would say that is a fantastic example of one. Other than that, basic trend lines, I find that a lot of these markets tend to trade in channels. So right now I would say that corn, for example, is in an upward trending channel. We've been in this channel since late August. And most recently, the lows this week are at the low end of that channel. So with March corn testing 680 earlier this week, that would be the low end of the channel. The upper end of the channel is going to be up around that 715 area. So if we can continue to hold down at this lower end of the channel, I do think that as we approach the November WASD report, especially if some of the trade is looking for some additional yield reduction from the USDA, that we may try to revisit the upper end of that channel. I do use Fibonacci's. Those are more bigger picture technical tools. And I think moving averages are becoming rather important. When you've got a trending market, the 10-day moving average really respects or the market really respects the 10-day moving average when the market is trending. When you see moving averages really get grouped together, that means the market's been consolidating, and we'd be looking for a large move once the market breaks out of that consolidation pattern.
It would seem to me that moving averages would be pretty easy for the black boxes, the AI trading to manage, because they are simple mathematical equations that are easy to put into some kind of code that would be watched. Have you seen that change from 2007 through the last 15 years?
Yes, I would say that as the trading has gotten more electronic and moved away from humans interacting in the pit, the way that the market trades has changed as well. So, you know, gone are the times of looking for a large order to come into the pit, of trying to figure out who that order was coming from, the purpose of the order. All of that is masked now, so you really don't know who's on the other side of most of these transactions, if ever. And so now we've got the high-speed algorithmic type trading that you will have. You know, at sometimes little air pockets here based on large orders coming in when certain setups are triggered and then executed. And so we've seen changes in that respect. We've seen changes in the way we manage USDA reports. So if you think back years ago, we used to have the market closed when we had the report release. That would give you a period of time to read the report, figure out what it meant, and then act accordingly. Now, when we had trade like that, we often had moves where when the market opened back up, if it was deemed a very bullish or very bearish report, we would often open very close to or at the limit, and then you might not trade the rest of the day. So what has changed there is we now trade through reports, and that doesn't give you the opportunity to really understand the report and what it says before making decisions, because those algorithmic traders will have their setups and their triggers already queued up, and they're looking for certain numbers, and so those decisions are made before a human being can really even process the information. So I think that, because of that, that puts a lot more weight on technical analysis during these reports. But it does also prevent this, you know, the market going and opening limit up or limit down. We do trade through prices now, which I do think is a big benefit of having the market open during reports.
I would say that at this point, I usually remind listeners that the CME Group and USDA had a battle of sorts as the overnight trade was coming into play, where every time USDA would try to get around being releasing reports during trading hours, CME Group simply would expand trading hours to cover that. So they didn't have a lot of choice as it relates to when the market is trading or not, and when they release. So they simply decided to release at 11 o'clock Central Time or noon in the Eastern Time Zone, because it was easy for everybody involved. I want to follow up on a couple of other things. You gave us some technicals for the corn market. How about for soybeans?
So soybeans are, you know, the high that we had yesterday, and I'm really looking at the January contract at this point, that is just right at the downtrend from the last peak that we had back in September. And so yesterday we went right up to that trend line. We saw some selling overnight. We do have a very good base of support down at that 1360 level in January soybeans. There's a gap to fill at 1357, and this market has been very aggressively defending that gap, and it's been very reluctant to fill that gap. And so I do think that one of two things is going to happen. Either this market breaks down below that 1360 level, in which case I think it measures back down to recheck the July lows. If that were the outcome, that would be a revisit of the $13 level basis, the January contract. However, if we can get through this short-term downtrend, I think we'll probably see a pretty quick pop back up to about 1430 to 35 as your first objective. But really, by and large, when you look at soybeans in this large trading range that we've been in since late July, when we hold at 1360 on the low end, we do typically try to make a run back up towards the 1480, 1490 area, and that may be the eventual outcome. If the market cannot press through these 1360 lows, we do have the long-term downtrend from the contract high made in June to that September peak, and that September peak was the day after the September WASDE report, where the USDA lowered yield and showed us that 200 million bushel ending stock number for the first time. That long-term downtrend will come in right around the 1480 vicinity currently. So if we do hold this low end of the range continually and the selling dries up, I think we go right back up to that area.
And finally, some of the numbers for wheat as you're watching it.
You know, I typically watch the KC wheat a little bit more than I do the Chicago wheat. This market has very good support in the mid-920s on the December KC wheat. We've got some lows that were made just prior to the quarterly stock report at the end of September. Those were around the 927, 928 area. We had a low early this week at 929. We had a low overnight at 929 and a half. So we continue to find support here. The 50-day moving average is at 928 and a half. If we do break through those late September lows, I think we'll see this market revisit 850. However, if we don't, I think we're going to pop right back up to the 990 to $10 area again. This wheat market has been trading a lot like 2008 as far as some of the highs that were made. You know, you think about the high in 2008 on Kansas City wheat was 1384 and three quarters. This year it was 1379 and a quarter. So failed within about a nickel of each other. And then you look at how the market has traded at since coming off of those highs, going and retesting $8, then bouncing back up to retest 10. I do think that if we continue this pattern, we're going to see another shot back down to the low eights again, and that will be, I think, another buying opportunity on wheat if we do see that market clean the downside out a little bit.
Brian Splitt is a technician in the marketplace. He's with AgMarket.net. His colleagues are with us as well, Wayne Nelson and Kurt Kimmel. Kurt, I wonder if you could take us through some of the fundamentals of this marketplace.
Boy, it's hard to pick any certain thing. There are so many different things going on here in the U.S. and around the world. Top and foremost right now is producers trying to wrap up some bean harvest here and get quite a bit of this corn out. And there's decision makings to be done here on whether to store or sell. But when you look at kind of the big picture as far as the overall marketplace, there's still quite a bit of concern about the Mississippi transportation costs in general, and that's just not going to go away anytime soon.
Not going to go away anytime soon. And this does cause a backup in the system that creates issues both at the Gulf and at the local elevator.
Yes, it does, Todd. I'll tell you what, you know, we looked here, I think 60-some percent of the grain moves. You take that, you add like that. But on now, it costs more to get your grain from northern Illinois to New Orleans than it does from there to China or any other place we go per bushel. The basis levels are terrible down there. They're extremely high at the Gulf and whatever it is. And we're not seeing a whole lot of hope. We're going to see some rains along the way, but boy, the ground is so dry. Can we fill that back up? Are we going to be able to get that done? You know, we saw China come in here on Thursday, bought some more beans. They shipped some beans this week. We had good sales. I think they're wanting to get them out before we get stuck with all of the $2 plus a bushel of shipping rates, because a lot of the stuff that went down there early was booked early and went down there early on cheaper rates, and that's sitting in there, and they probably had the contracts and what they're doing along the way. But we've got a real mess with this stuff now. You know, we're talking to some of the farmers down there on the river. They were 40, 50 over, you know, 2 weeks ago. Now they're 40, 50 under, but they are seeing some hope and some good things. Some farmers come over around in the one area around just north of Memphis, and they bought corn out of the bin and paid 40 over for it to haul it back to their elevators in western Arkansas that way. Now it gives him a bin to put his beans in. It is so shallow down there. You look out the back of Phil's house there and where all the docks were and those really, really nice boats that went out on the Mississippi River. They're sitting on mud. I mean, it is that low and we're that far behind. You know, we're lucky in our area. We've got a lot of the ethanol plants over in Indiana and like that. But you know what happened this week? I got two or three calls, and they're rejecting corn for aflatoxin. So here we've got an aflatoxin problem. On top of all this, the grain won't move. So, you know, a lot of crazy things going on, but the big thing is going to be rain for the Mississippi, water to get us back there. How the weather progresses, whether the La Nina ends or not in South America, and what China is really going to do to come back on things.
This is quite interesting because I've not been in the cash market before. I've always been in the futures and options and grain marketing in general. But listen to the cash grain merchandisers. They pretty well confirm that, with, like we've seen in the past, the function of the market now is to move some of this grain from Illinois onto the Western Belt because of the severe weather conditions they had and the shortage there. But that's not the only big picture here. The Mississippi's plugged up in a sense, but yet that's kind of a blessing for some of these guys, they say, because now it frees up a little bit more grain to move to the Southwest. And also maybe it frees up where we can ship some grain out of the Pacific Northwest. But the other factor is the Southeast, the poultry and pork producers down there. So being in Indiana, Illinois, I think there's quite a bit of an advantage here because they're going to pull grain both ways all at once in here, trying to secure some supply. So I kind of feel, though, even though the river bids are terrible, all these other bids should hold together here, at least going to year end.
So the expectation is the rail bid should be very good?
Well, we'll have to see what the administration does if we're going strike, but that's a concern. That would be devastating not only to the agriculture community, but just transportation in general. So like Wayne kind of hinted on there or mentioned that it was true fact is a lot of this barge freight was booked early, shipped a little bit early. Some of this rail freight was booked early, but boy, it's going to be kind of dicey in here, a bad deal for this railroad workers going to strike.
So the livestock sector is a bit of a saving grace, both for the corn farmer in Illinois, parts of Iowa, Indiana, depending on whether they're going to the Southeast to feed poultry and hog farms, a little bit to Arkansas, I would think, for poultry, and then, of course, Hereford, Texas, and areas in Kansas for beef production, as well as closer to Denver, because their crop there, even though it was under irrigation, was just in bad, bad shape.
Yeah, it's sad because that whole Western Belt hit hard, and those producers are going to be tight holders, especially if you thought you marketed 50%, you're probably 75, 80% sold. So they're going to be tight holders, so we're going to have to move some grain around. But two, the other thing is the ethanol side. There's analysts talking about ethanol crushes down and ethanol this and ethanol that, but they didn't have the grain to run through the plants. I think the ethanol guys are going to be in there also competing for it. So the river bid's gone, but the feed sector's there, the ethanol sector's there too.
So the question then becomes, what should a farmer do with that grain that needs to go across the scale? They usually have maybe a week to make a decision as to whether to store it or sell it.
Wow. With these lower basis levels and like that, I think it's time that we, you know, put some re-ownership back into it. We didn't have much of a carry-in stuff a couple weeks ago when Kurt, when we done this last time, I was talking about how there's no carry to get out there and they should be looking to buy in their calls for out there. We put carry back in now because of we're thinking there may be water back in the river at the time. We're going to get the glut off like that, and it's going to come back down and come in a little bit. But right now, it's a terrible time to think of doing that. We probably want to stay with some of the closer options if they want to replace some of the stuff that way. You know, we've heard, I was just talking to Roy before we started recording this, and he said there was a train, I think, that went out of Mendota that went clear to Pacific Northwest as to try to get something floating that way because they are at the Gulf, don't have the ends to do that. But I think that, like you say, along the way here, we are going to see places it's going to be pulled here and there. And the weather is so big. I mean, last week we were actually, as a percent of the country, a percent of ground that is in some sort of drought situation was the highest it's ever been since they started recording it. And I believe 87%, if I'm not wrong. That's a lot of dryness to try to get back in here. We sure hope we can see some weather forecasts. Snow would be great this year. And, you know, I hate driving in snow. I hate plowing snow. But I think for my farmer friends, I hope we see a lot of snow.
Do you know, was it a corn shuttle train or a soybean shuttle train that went to the PNW. It doesn't make very much difference. Probably both were headed to China, I would suspect.
I believe it was beans, but you're right. I think that it's going to be going to China on some of this. This is this downtime, and I think that the Chinese had freight booked ahead of time. So I don't think they're paying this $2 a bushel extra for it, but they're willing to take it because they had that freight booked, and they want to take advantage of doing that and get it in here before they maybe get stuck buying later if the freight doesn't come down. You know, we've got some real problems with energy and what's going on here. We sure wish would like to see, you know, some opening up of some American wells and some drilling going on here. Don't know if we're going to see it or whatever along the way, but a lot of problems. The farmers got some hard decisions to make here, and I think that if they can get some good basis levels, it's time maybe to at least do the basis and wait and see if we can bring this corn and beans back. If not, you know, like I say, if not, I think we're going to have to stay a little closer on the options that we were thinking of buying. We were going to go clear out to July 2 weeks ago, and now we've put carry in the market because we were able to buy those so much cheaper 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, there's decisions to make, but I got to be kind of optimistic in through here from the standpoint, like the producer. Producer's in a mindset right now, he's going to store the rest of it. He took advantage of some higher premiums earlier, fulfilled forward contracts and so forth. But a lot of uncertainty in front of us, if it's sold, the replacement idea would be, man, I sold this grain, I sold corn, I don't want to see it go above $7. So I would use a $7 type price. So if it goes above $7, you're on board. There's several different strategies you can use. The other thing on the beans, I think $14.50 to defend it. You know, if you move beans, worst thing you want to see is beans go higher. And I think you use $14.50 on the beans as a replacement option strategy.
How much approximately does that cost you?
It depends. There's different types of scenario. If you're right at the money there, you're talking, you know, 30, 40 cents. If you do some of these spreads, for example, buy something out in the money, sell something out of the money, and kind of try to pick up a little bit in the middle there, you can get down to this 20, 25 cents.
So you can get it down to almost what it would cost you just to pay it to keep it in the elevator to January.
You know, and one of the things that Kurt didn't mention, and that's just for replacement thing, some of the guys along the way are thinking if we see enough of a sell-off, they don't mind being long, and they're selling some puts to go along with the same option, and if it goes down instead of up, they've collected money on that put that they sold, and it's going to help finance the other part, and if it gets that cheap, they don't mind being long at, say, down a couple dollars from where they're trying to buy it, you know, or thinking it's going to go on up. Because if they can buy it at that level, they don't mind being an owner's into the spring and seeing what the spring weather brings.
Talk to me about the fundamentals that are positive, some of them that are bearish. I'm thinking Ukraine-Russia war, wheat. Supply side would be, of course, the new crop coming out of Brazil and Argentina.
Yeah, you hit it. The bullish part is that Black Sea region and the Ukrainians not being able to fully supply the grain inventory there. The other thing is China's back in the market buying. I think that's short-term positive. But if things would blow up between them and Taiwan or coup or whatever, there's some price risk there. So there's quite a few things to watch worldwide. The thing is, you just don't want to do nothing in through here because a black swan could come in and change the whole attitude real quick. Positive-wise, I think you got to be optimistic going to year-end here at least because they've already factored in a big South American crop, so the pressure is on South America to come, for Brazil to come in with this 155 million metric ton crop, and that might be hard to deal with the weather uncertainty there.
Australia, wet, 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 where we're dry, 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 and their wheat is going down because of it, and it's going to take the world wheat stocks down. I think they're going to see a great reduction in the Australian wheat and some of the people and what they're going to be able to get and if they want milling wheat and stuff out of it. If you take that and Putin does something silly, you know, and maybe quit getting the excess wheat out of Russia, it could put our wheat market back in vogue in along that way. One of the things we have to remember is we've got wheat going in the ground now, and it's awfully, awfully dry. You know, they say planting the dust, the Benzel bust, but it's got to get up out of the ground. It's got to get enough moisture to germinate. So we've got a lot of wheat going in some pretty high prices. I know that a lot of landlords are saying, hey, let's do this bean, double crop beans here along the way. As we look out there, these guys haven't been real excited about doing it, other than some cases.
Yeah, so when producers do make a decision to put wheat into the ground, especially if it's new acres that they've decided to add, additional wheat acres, whether that be they've never put it in the ground before or just we're adding, especially in the soft red winter wheat growing regions, adding acres, do they need to take advantage of current pricing to make sure that they've got something locked in as a profit?
You can do some type of strategy with Wayne or myself, because basically if you go to the cash market, that's just impossible to do something out that far. Yes, there are. You can do a straight hedge, or you can do some covered positions and stuff by using the futures or option strategy. It gives you flexibility, because most guys put wheat in, they don't want to do anything until they get into spring and see it get through the winter kill concern.
Also, Todd, and what we got to remember we talked about the crummy conditions we're planting this wheat in. We don't know if it's going to come up. Basically, if you got cash wheat contracted, they really need it. They can really put you over a barrel. We like the idea of using futures or options to hedge it, because we can get out of it when we know if we want to tear that up in the spring. If it doesn't make it through the spring and look good, we can tear it up. We've got our option there, whatever. We know what we've invested for something like that. You know, and basically along the way, if you have your crop insurance, you tear it up, you got enough maybe to pay for your option.
Let's turn around and talk about next year for just a little bit. There were some numbers that came out from IHS, the old Informa, this week. They believe they were at 91.9 million acres for corn, 88.5 million for soybeans. Those sound pretty close to normal, so 92 and 88 or thereabouts. 180 million acres total, but still quite a few more acres than last year were put into the ground.
Well, when you look at the overall picture in here, I don't think there's going to be acres go bare in here. This ground's going to be farmed, and those are some good numbers to work with here. We'll have more ideas and certainty as we get in this winter, as producers really nail down their decisions. But talking to a banker today, he's fearful of this winter because he sees this coming. Higher interest rates, the cost of doing business or borrowing money is going to more than double, and that's going to be kind of a shocker to these guys that are highly leveraged and have to borrow money.
It seems like there's more acres. I think we've had a fair amount of prevent plant acres over the last few years because of the North and South Dakota, some Nebraska, some places like that, and that's one of the reasons like that. Todd, as you look at it, some of his old people think of him as Sparks, not Informa. Willard Sparks was one of the big guys in the business when I started, and they were Sparks Commodities down there. But anyhow, no, I think there's a lot going on to look at like that. A lot of talk about fertilizer, whether you should buy it, pay for it, do things like that. We're seeing gluts of fertilizer. Places actually move on a load of fertilizer from some of these other countries, and they think that we might not be hurting for potash and DAP come spring. So some of the guys are holding back on doing that. It is so dry, and hydrous is not a wise thing to try to put on the fall. You have to have some moisture in the ground to hold that so you don't lose it, even with NSERVE. So we're seeing a lot of pullback on the anhydrous here right now.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. We'll start with you, Kurt Kimmel.
This weather situation, look at the drought monitor and the river and everything, it kind of reminds me of about 1987. We were extremely dry in the fall. We had some positive prices, optimism. All winter long, we did not get Wayne snow at all. And it was an absolute germination problem going in that spring time for some of this crop and some of these different types of soil. So I think, boy, we're going to have to watch this weather real close, and we're going to have these weather guys wound up as we go into next spring.
Your final word, Wayne Nelson?
I think we talked about it a lot here today. I think one of the things is if you're going to have a lot of your crop put in the bin, not priced, not hedged or arrived, didn't have the basis set or something like that along the way, I think that you maybe want to look at some of these calls. Some of them will be a little bit to protect yourself so you can go and do things. I think as we look at the fertilizer, if you're going to price some fertilizer, price some 23 crops along with it, because we know they're up here at these levels and what along the way. But like I say, start looking at what it's going to cost you to put that crop out and what's going to be a good return, and that's going to help us know what we should do.
And Brian Split, we'll come back to you to close our program out. Do you have a final word for us today?
Final comment, Todd. Just be mindful of what you're thinking about when you're looking at your marketing and your decision to potentially pay an elevator for commercial storage. We're hearing a lot of talk of 30 cents to store till the end of the year. And if that's the case for corn, without carry in the market, and you look at December at 683 and a quarter and July's at 683 and a quarter, I don't see the benefit to storing, paying to store commercially right now when you can re-own a deferred contract at the same price that you could sell the spot contract. So just to have those conversations, you know, make sure you're comparing apples to apples. Find somebody to work through that to help educate you if you don't understand it.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, and Brian Split, all of agmarket.net. Don't forget to register for the Farm Assets Conference. You can do that online as well at willag.org or at farmassetsconference.com. It's coming up at the I Hotel in Champaign, Illinois on the 21st day of November. That's the Monday of Thanksgiving week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.